हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौनत्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, countless millions, 96, countless millions of Yadavas waited, absorbed in talk about Krishna, their minds and eyes anxiously focused on the path from which Krishna's inner palace. Just as one who feels at ease talks about what is on his mind, the Yadavas naturally discuss Krishna, the pastimes he had performed on various occasions, and also the business at hand with him in the royal assembly. The Yadavas had no inclination to talk or think about anything not involving Krishna. The dynasty of the Yadavas was so populous that Sukadeva Goswami thought them practically uncountable. The Yadu dynasty produced innumerable great men of famous deeds. Even in hundreds of years, O King, one could never count them all. I have heard from authoritative sources that the Yadava family employed okay, 38,800,000 teachers just to educate their children. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.90.40-41. Huh, interesting. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the number of teachers cited by Sukadeva Goswami is a conservative estimate obtained from hearsay, but the number might be much higher. Since teachers often take responsibility for dozens of students, the total number of school-aged boys in the Yadu dynasty is beyond estimation. They are only a fraction of the whole family. Right, so you're talking about a lot of people. Because right, the standard is 12. But if you can organize, means if you can't organize, you don't take more than 12. But if you can organize, then you can take, you know, the traditions up to 10,000. Like Vishwamitra, Vishishta, Durvasa, they had 10,000. Right? You know, because Vishwamitra used to be an emperor. So basically, you would have to admit he probably knows something about organizing. And Vishishta he takes the position of Rajguru for great personalities. Like he was the Rajguru for Ram's father, Dasara. Right? And Durvasa is quite famous. So. Like that. Yeah. He has 10,000 disciples. He's always had. It's not that one time you hear him with 10,000, one half time you only hear him with 10. Why there's only 10? What happened to the 10,000? Says, oh, they couldn't handle it anymore. You know, you know so it works. It wasn't up there?
No.
He didn't find it. Probably put it somewhere else. Put it very safely.
So Maharaj, how to organize so be quantitative disciple like that?
It means you teach the older ones, they teach the younger.
Yes.
So you don't teach all of them, unless sometimes you're having a general, like philosophy or that. But actually when you teach technical things, you only teach the older ones. You know, it's just like, let's say you have 10, ten disciples. Right. So you teach them first, then with time there's more, so then they teach. So each of them teaches 10.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Then you have, 10 times 10, 100.
Yeah.
Right? Then if each of those teaches 10, you have 1,000. Each of those teach 10, then that's 10,000. Yes. So when the classes are going on, then each one's teaching the next level down. Does that make sense? So in four levels you have 10,000. So it's not, it's not, if you know management, it's not a big deal. If you don't, then 10's a trouble. Like, so that's the point, is if you have that ability, then you can take however many you're comfortable with. If not, then you stick to 12. 12's pretty straightforward. Is that, does that make sense? Yeah. So then they know. Like that. That was Prabhupada's point. Yeah. So even you take this by 12, then you already have basically 400 million. Right, and the kids of going to Gurukul then would only be a certain proportion of the family.
Yes.
Right. So then, you know, you're talking about a lot of yadus. Right. As soon as the yadus learned that Narada had arrived, they came running out in a flurry. They quickly raised him from the ground, took him by his hands, and led him into the assembly hall. They'd offered him a large heavenly seat, but he refused to sit on it. Yielding to his desire, they gave him a place to sit on the ground, and they all sat down around him. Right? They give him a nice seat, they'll all sit on the seats. He sits on the ground, they sit on the ground. It's not a problem for them. Next, the triumphant Narad Muni, confident that he has found the greatest recipients of Krishna's mercy, will begin to sing the praises of the Yadu dynasty. Right, so they only have interest in taking care of Krishna. The other kings, they're managing, they're organizing, they're doing all the things. So that's the point that comes down, is that it's not a separate endeavor. See, because we'll do something for a benefit. Right? Does that make sense? Like, let's say I perform an occupational duty. What's the point of that? Right? I get the results. Okay. Now I take up devotional service. I get the result. But the point is in devotional, but so I'm seeing it as two different things. But actually devotional service isn't as much a process as a consciousness. Right? Otherwise it would be the International Society for the Process of Krishna Consciousness, right? Does that make sense? Or the understanding of Krishna consciousness, or you understand, but it's just about the consciousness itself. So then that will mean is that we're used to thinking of it, okay, there's the devotional thing and then there's this other thing. I'm doing the devotional because of the benefit, I'm doing my occupation because of the benefit. But since it's actually a change in consciousness, it's not a separate endeavor. I'm performing my occupational duties because that's what I'm supposed to do to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And then, if one technically doesn't have occupational duties, then one only has the devotional, the sadhana. Right? Because there's nothing to maintain. Right? If you're taking responsibility for something, there's things to maintain. Therefore, the occupation. If one's not, then there's no occupation because there's nothing to maintain. So, therefore, since you're maintaining this aspect for Krishna, therefore the occupation and the devotional service aren't separate. Right? So that means then those things within the occupation or in what we're doing that may have some fruitive element that are not necessary, that will be dropped. Does that make sense? But the things that are actually necessary for the service, that will remain. Because if we look at it that way, there may be things we need to drop, may not be. Right? It just depends upon how much we're adding into things. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, so it's just like I was discussing with one devotee about cars, right? And so he had a Mercedes. So it came up, why the Mercedes? You know, why not something else? Why that? And then he was pointing out, because of his occupation, that was the like accepted standard. You know, you drive a Mercedes, then you're doing okay, right? You know, I mean, you could drive a Maserati or something, but, you know, that's maybe considered a little extreme within there. But, you know, it would be okay, but it would be something to talk about. But if you drive a Mercedes, no one talks. It's just you're normal. You know, so he says, even though I don't need it, right? Because, I mean, you know, he drives a little bit around the city. What do you need such a car for? But he says, if I don't have it, my occupation doesn't go properly. So therefore, for him, having Mercedes then becomes part of the service. Because he has that, then his occupation goes well. He can take care of everything and do his sadhana and everything like that. Does that make sense? But let's say someone doesn't need, by him having one, now that would be extra. That then you can see is, well, actually for my service I don't require that. You know, if it does have something, it's, you know, whatever your reason, you know, it lasts longer, or it's more accommodating, or it's less trouble, or like that, then that then may have some meaning. But if it's just you like it, then as long as that interest is there, you have it, you engage it in your services that you're doing, driving to the temple, doing whatever you're doing. But at the time when it's not important, and it won't matter if you have it or not, you know, then it can be dropped. Does that make sense? But you have some car, you have something, you know. Yes.
It seems that to be engaged in a direct Krishna conscious activities, we need minimal facilities, actually.
Yes.
But indirect takes a lot of facilities.
Yes, indirect needs a lot. Because direct is basically means if you're really extending it, you know, if you have a, you know, beads in a bead bag, you know, you're basically you're set.
You know.
Yeah, that's it, you know. You have that, you have your cheddar on your shoulder, you got your beads. The Prabhupada said tilak, beads and kopan, and then in the society of sadhus you're fully dressed. You know, so it works. You know.
So does it mean that as we develop in life and Krishna consciousness, because we strive for the direct,
right,
then all, we just drop down things.
We just drop. It means, in other words, there's a certain amount that's necessary for whatever is the basic lifestyle you're living. Hmm. Right? So if one's within the household, one will acquire something more, and if one's not, then one will acquire
something
less. Yeah. But the point is this Prabhupada gives the definition of how much to have or how much to be involved in is what's comfortable. And he defines comfortable as not uncomfortable. Right? You know, let's say someone has grown up in a big house. You know, 6-bedroom house for them is standard. That's what they grew up in. Everybody in their family had. So for them, a 6-bedroom house isn't extravagant. It's just, for them, comfortable. It's normal. It's not a prestige thing. It's just normal. Right? But then with time, as they go, they're not involved in the social scene anymore, then the person may find that, you know, they can drop down to a much smaller place. You know, as they get older, they're not involved and stuff like that. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, unless they figure out some way to turn their house into a temple or an ashram or something, then that's another thing. You know, 20 brahmacharis in one bedroom. You know, like that kind of thing. So, but the point is that it's when it's not uncomfortable, that's when you make the adjustment. Because that's on a day-to-day thing. That's nitya. Right? But let's say on a festival day, that's when you push your limits. You know, fast more, chant more, do more service. Because that's occasional. So you do it, if it worked, great. Next time you do it again. You know, if it didn't, it was too much, the next festival you cut it back a little bit. But because it's on a daily, you don't do anything extreme. You just move at what works. You know, you phase things in, phase them out, until you're confident that that's what's required. And once you have what's required, don't keep more. Because otherwise it's just a headache, you know. Because it may be a value, but the point is if you don't need it, then don't keep it. You know, you just have to figure out for yourself what works. If you don't use something for 6 months or a year or 2 years or 5 years or whatever it is, then at some point you get rid of it. You know? Yes, we haven't used this for the last 60 years. Confidently get rid of this. Is that so? So, and it's very individual, and so, but and it's not about the externals. It's about your engagement of it in the Lord's service, based on either it is the occupation, the natural occupation, so you're doing it, or you have some particular desires or interests, so you're engaging them. So the idea is, as long as that desire is there, you engage it. You don't falsely give it up. You know, if you're engaging it and you find that after a while it's not necessary, but because it's what you're practiced, you're engaging it, then with time you can see is that you're unsteady enough at that, then it can be dropped. Is that what I'm saying? Because the idea is that it's stable. And as we mentioned, then festivals are always there for trying to see what are the limits. You know, if it's like you have to be eating, you know, three times before noon, then if you fast until noon, that's already big.
Yes.
Right? You know, like that. Then you start to see, I don't die if I, you know, like that. So then you may be more, less involved about your eating. You know, you won't take it as seriously. You know, what's necessary will be done. Does this make sense? So it's a very, very intelligent, very accommodating, very individualistic process. That's why it also is more complicated. Because you have to be able to accommodate all that, and each person can function differently. Right? It's very easy if you say, everybody does this, and that's the way it is, so then, and there's no adjustment, but then it works for most of the cases, like 80%, but then the 20%, there's always a difficulty. So the concept of the Vedas, it will accommodate everybody. And everybody's happy. Because if 80% are doing 20% or not, the 20 is not happy, the 80 is not happy. Mm-hmm. Right? But in here, everybody situates according to their position, and then everybody's happy. So, yeah. So it's a very... it's a very good system, like that. Yes.
Previously, we spoke about fruitive mentality.
Yes.
And here, we all do something just to get a result.
Right.
It's only here in the material sphere that it's prominent, not in the spiritual.
There, you want a result to please Krishna. Otherwise, why would prayojana be a major element? But there's no such thing as trying to get something for yourself. Right? It's just about Krishna. In that, it means if you're taking the spiritual world as a whole, then it's always connected to Krishna, whether you're involved or not. That's another thing. But in Braj, it's just about Krishna, right? Because all these different things are ways that Krishna is pleased. That's why you have these systems. Right? It's just like this: is somebody happy with their breathing? Yeah, people are comfortable with their breathing, right? Right. So it's not a problem. Okay, and as it will be pointed out in the Bhagavatam, the Vedas come from the breathing of the Lord. Right? So therefore, there's not a problem in following the Veda and pleasing Krishna, because it's his breathing. Right? Yeah, is that what you said? Yeah. So it's not. There's no contradiction here. It comes up as contradiction. Well, how can I do my occupation and do devotional service? Because I'm doing them each for, you know, a different mentality. I may be doing devotional service in the proper mentality, but I haven't understood how to do the indirect with the proper mentality. But if we understand the proper mentality, then it's what has to be done, that's done. And more than that's not done. Yes.
Then we see some people present Krishna consciousness, which is direct. But then they present it for the indirect.
Yeah. So you have to be careful with that. Just like
then they see, you know, you can get this and that, and even in the scriptures in Karma Kanda, we see you chant names and then you get this result.
Yes.
And
so that will be bhakti, Mr. Karma. But the point is they're following a system, because it's like if there's law and order, then there can be upliftment, there can be development. And if there's no law and order, they can't. So, if law and order, then people can be God conscious. If there's not, it's very difficult. And because people are interested in material things, they'll only get that also if there's law and order. Right? So, when that's all in place, then you can do something. It's just as a point. Means it adjusts the context, but it maintains the thing. Position of organized crime, right? It can only function if there's law and order. Because if there's not law and order, all the little guys are making so much trouble. But if everybody's following the law, then the organized crime's not following the law. It works nicely. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it means if you're a little petty thief around the corner, then it doesn't matter. But if you want to do it on a big organized fashion, you actually have to have proper law and order in a city to be able to function. So in the same ways, is if we're taking it that not connected to Krishna, it is illegal. Right? So, but the point is you still have to have a framework of law and order, or following God's laws, to actually even be successful in material sense gratification. So that's the whole thing, is that we see in the Vedas that those who followed the Vedic culture, then whatever was interest in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, they had it. Right? There was no one, you don't see a more developed religious system. You see religious systems, but nothing as developed as this. You don't see as much development as economics as before. You know, means in the modern scenario, because you're trying to get, you're adjusting to an unnatural system. But when it was more natural, then you see India was always wealthy. It was never a time that you hear that it wasn't. Right? Sense gratification, then they're very famous for that. Right? And then liberation, and that also, they're quite famous. So, there the organization is there so the mundane can be accomplished. So all it is that one's shifting that from doing that for yourself to doing for Krishna. So the only basic adjustment is you're only doing those things that you're supposed to be doing for Krishna, rather than what you're supposed to be doing and what you want to be doing. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that means that's why there's occupational duties. Right, there's the duties of renunciation and all that. You know, so you have, and then you have, so within pravriti, then you have what you're supposed to be doing and what you can do, even though you yourself, it's not a duty, you're doing it because you want. You do ashwamedha yagyas, you don't have to do them, but you can do them. Right? Does that make sense? They're not part of your daily regular activities. Yeah. Like that. You know, it's not like you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you have your coffee, read your newspaper, do your ashwamedha yagya, go to work. You know, it's not like that. You know, you know, it's slightly... Does that make sense? But going to work, that's something you do as a regular thing. In other words, you can't buy your newspaper. So that's a problem. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that at this point, this is sometimes why it becomes bewildering, because how is it they're doing all these things that we would call mundane, that the mundane is actually the consciousness. But because until we can discern between primary and secondary, then we follow the secondary aspect of the primary, Though it's not about the secondary, it's about the primary. You know, therefore, you know, the renunciation and all these other things are there. Does that make sense? Because then we can identify, okay, if I'm wearing tilak and putting on a dhoti, I'm devotional. Right? Like that, because otherwise I would be putting on something else that we may not want to discuss. Right? Does that make sense? But if you get technical, the smartest are wearing tilak and dhoti. And they don't even have an alternative lifestyle. That is their lifestyle. But it's not devotional.
But they also think they are devotees.
They can, but even if they're not, means you, even if you have a smarter who's not, a, you know, Vaishnav, they may be Ganapati or a Shaiva or like that, they're still going to wear a dhoti and tilak and wear have a sika and Brahmin thread and sit on the floor and eat, sit in line, serve prasad in the same way, so, you know, eat in the same way, you know, everything's the same. Does that make sense? So that's what we mean by you have to have the structure. You want to get any benefit, whether it's material or spiritual, you need a structure. So therefore, as long as one's conditioned, then we use the standard structure. If one is liberated, then depending on the situation, you could use the structure or not. So you do have Paramahamsas, they don't necessarily follow the structure. Right? If they're abhuts, they don't necessarily follow. Right? Because there's no need. They're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, so they're following on the transcendental platform. But there's no need that they need support from the material platform. Like for us, we have an ideal environment, then everything goes nicely. Right? If it's not so ideal, it doesn't go nicely. Does that make sense? So because of our conditioning, we're still dependent upon our environment. So therefore, then we try to create as ideal environment as possible. Right? Does that make sense? You know, people are sitting in Mayapur, okay? And then after 3 months, you see they're not sitting in Mayapur. Why not? It's no money. So then they're gone. So if those things are there, that all that's in place, then you can sit here. But that's the point of having all the facilities, so you can just do your service. Right? But then some get so absorbed in making their money, even though they're in the dham, they don't necessarily pay attention to their sadhana. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Does that make sense? You know, you see some of the locals, it's not necessarily that their sadhana is great. You know, at 5 in the morning, they're out there with their rickshaw. You know, so. So all this group needs, you know, intelligence and training to know what to do and what's important and what's not important. Otherwise, if one gets distracted, then one can, you know, it's just, in other words, nice Maya. Mm-hmm. Right? It means, in other words, the Vedas offer nice devotional service and nice Maya. Right? Modern culture doesn't really offer either. You know, there's a moment here and there, but it's, you know, it's just like I said, I think it was on, it's generally on the longer haul flights, I think, you have these advertisements in the in-flight magazine for, you know, cruises and, you know, holiday places and that. You don't see them so much on the short haul so much, but. Remember, one is, you see it, the same thing comes up over the years, the last, you know, 20 years or something, looking at it. Then you always see is that there's, you have some kind of nice situation where there are some members of the family, ideally women or children, smiling. Right? Either sitting, you know, around a nice, in a nice situation, or at a spa, or at a dinner, you know, or doing some kind of, how you say, sport or touristic kind of thing, you know, and they must be happy, right? Right? Is that what I said? And that's, but how many pictures are there? There's just a couple of them. 2, 3. You don't want to overdo it. You know, it's not like that they have, you know, catalogs full of smiling people. So that's the whole thing, is that in all that, there's only that much. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I say, in the hotel, the foyer is nice. Right? You know, and, you know, some of the restaurants have some good spots. Like that. But, you know, walking up the stairs, the elevators, walking down the hallways, they're always the same boring thing with the carpet and the little doors on the side. And you know what I'm saying? So there's only a few spots in the whole hotel that you can say, now, this is nice. So by the volume of the hotel and how many spots are nice, it's not actually a great proportion. But because we're looking for Ananda, then, you know, a little bit is enough. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, here is that we see the Yadavas, there's millions of, and they're waiting. That's the thing. It's just not that, you know, they're calling up, oh, is Krishna there yet? And when he's there, then I'll be right over. No, they're already waiting for Krishna. This is an aspect of service, waiting upon someone. That there's no necessarily service happening, but you're waiting in case any service comes up. Right? Kind of in the Western environment, you have is that the ladies in waiting. It just means there's not necessarily something to do, but they're there in case there is. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, I think Versailles had a lot of that. A lot of people standing around just in case there was something to do. Yeah. You know, so it's standard. So Krishna has countless millions, not millions. Right? Countless millions. You know. And they're all sitting around waiting, and they're just absorbed in talks about Krishna. So that's the thing. So the past tense, he performed in various occasions, also the business at hand with him in the royal assembly. So that means what it is that they do, that's their occupation. So the occupation in the spiritual world is just to serve Krishna. So we can do the exact same thing here. And the point is it takes care of you. So it takes care of you in the spiritual world, it takes care of you in the material world. But we have this idea is that spiritual is one thing, and then, you know, gain is another. But the point is the whole system is God's system. That's what we're saying. Varnasha, we're taking it as, oh, it's just some system, or it's an Indian system. No, it's God's system of culture, how to interact amongst the devotees. But it's designed in such a way that the karmis would also be interested, right? Better the karmis are interested, there's more available. Right? Does that make sense? Means if the greater community has no interest in vegetarian, it's hard to find things to eat. But if the community is interested in vegetarian, then there's plenty of stuff to eat. Right? Before it was you had to go through and pick through a whole shop to get a couple of items. Now you can go in the shops dedicated to just items that we would eat. Yes. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, before you had to come to India to get a shawl. Now you can buy them anywhere in the world. Right? So it makes it easy. Does that make sense? So that's the whole concept. Is that the occupations, you know, the duties one has, that is service to Krishna, and it takes care of you. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is that's why it'll be harder to tell necessarily here. Because they just seem like they're just sitting around and doing regular kshatriya stuff. You know, Brahma, you know he's doing something as a qualitative incarnation. You know, like that. But here, it's just they're just sitting around and talking. About Krishna, but talking.
Thank you. Yes.
So we see this system, it's very often mentioned by Srila Prabhupada, this is a perfect system.
Yes.
Somehow we don't see it works in here. So is it just a matter of time, or when is it going to happen?
Yeah. It's just time.
Oh.
Whether you want to wait around to see it work is another thing. It means you go back to the spiritual world, it works there, so if you want to see a working model, you don't have to wait here. Right? So, you can go, but, you know, from my estimation, it'll take a few generations.
Generation meaning 20 years? Or?
Meaning the kids that are now, when they grow up and they're trained, and then as adults, that'll start to establish it. Then when their kids are trained, and then grow up, then it will be more fixed. But when you have three generations that are trained and situated in the system, then it will be solid. But now, because first generations hears about it, some follow it nicely, some don't, but it's a real mix. So the second generation doesn't really have, may not have a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So when you have basically all three generations, you know, in other words, if you've gone through the Vedic system, and that practiced it, been able to use it nicely, then when you're in a senior position, then the younger, next generation, as they come into it, then you're able to give them advice and train and stuff like that. So they're getting the training, but then they're getting that backup support. You know, it's just like now, you can go to your grandparents or stuff like that, and they could give you some general salient advice on life. But there are details you may not want to know about.
No.
Yeah. You know. So it's, but the general concept. But they can say that in a sentence. You know, if you think about it, you know, those real gems of wisdom. You know, if someone's lucky, they've heard a couple of them or one of them. But that's it. Somebody's whole life, and they got one sentence. Okay, at least they got a sentence. That's better than some that don't have anything. Is that? So that's when it will be strong. But one can, if one understands it and one applies it, one gets the benefit immediately. Because being an eternal principle, you can always apply it. You know? It's just like you're hungry, you can always, there's that concept of eating always works. It's not that, oh, I missed breakfast, so now there'll be a problem in eating lunch because the eating process has been thrown off. No, eating works. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's made the sound as if it is just some localized, time-bound detail. When actually it's the eternal principle, everything works on it. So people who are successful are actually following the principles given by the Varnashram system, they just don't know it. They may know that there's something special here, but they don't know it comes from Shastra. They just know, okay, if you care about your workers, or you know, you cooperate with the government, or you pay attention to your duties, you know, you surround yourself by qualified people, you know, all different things like this. They know that that's important, but they don't know that that's, Shastra already says that. So it doesn't have that mode of goodness basis, it has a mode of passion. Like that. If it's working. If it's not working, then it's generally got a mode of ignorance basis. You know, so everything's got a basis. You don't have to worry, everything's.
Goes back to Prakriti.
Yes. Yes. Oh, chapter 5, continue. Okay. Priya, the beloved. Narada praises the Yadavas, 99 to 115. In this section. Srila Narad Muni continues his talks with the residents of Dwarka. Full appreciation of these final chapters of Brihad Bhagavatamrita requires a fine understanding of rasa. In order to understand what makes the Yadavas so exalted, we will analyze their position according to authoritative statements from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yadavas were considered by the Pandavas to be greater recipients of Krishna's mercy due to their constant association with the Lord. Is this the only difference? As observed earlier, Arjuna is the emblem of Shakyarati, and along with the other Pandavas, is considered to be on the level of Sneha. Footnote 1. Sneha is defined as follows by Srila Rupa Goswami. Sneha. When prema becomes extremely thick and the heart melts, it is called Sneha. In this state, one cannot tolerate even a moment's separation from the Lord. Right? So you can see as that was Arjuna's problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? Like that. He was most affected by separation because of the Sneha. Like that. The Yadavas, in contrast, are categorized as Dasya Bhaktas, but of special variety. Specifically, they are Nitya Siddha Parishadas in both Sambrahma and Gaurava Priti Rasa. The highest among the Yadavas, Uddhava, is beyond Sneha, on the platform of Rag, and his Priti Rasa is mixed with Sakya. Thus, Uddhava can be considered more elevated than the Pandavas due to his greater physical proximity, closer family ties, and also on the basis of his spiritual emotions. These concepts are explained in more detail in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The three types of Rati, Priti, Shakya, and Vatsalya, are pleasing to the heart. They arise from deep friendliness to the Lord and are always followed with possessiveness of the Lord.
What's
Priti?
Priti.
It said that they are Dasya.
Priti usually was considered
one. I mean, it's mentioned up here that that's the position. Priti just means that I think it's more the element of intimacy. But you see it used in different ways. Well, let's see how it unfolds here. They arise from deep friendliness to the Lord and are always endowed with possessiveness of the Lord. So that sense of possession is there. So that deepens the relationship, right? Because if it's the other way around, I belong to the Lord, that has one flavor. If the Lord belongs to me, then that's another flavor. Yes.
So the sense of possessiveness, it comes from Sakya Rasa, actually. Because Dasya, it's just a flavor.
It's just a flavor, but let's see, you kind of get the idea that you can have a servitorship that has the sense of possessiveness to it. So it just has greater intimacy. You know, it's generally rare.
Can we say how one has it?
No, I don't think. I think this possessive element probably begins in this the kind of Goloka scene. I think it's all a connection with Krishna. I don't think you get that flavor so much in the other realms. When Rati, with deep friendship and possessiveness, is found in three types of devotees, recipients of mercy, friends, and elders, it becomes Priti Rati, Shakya Rati, and Vatsalya. So recipients of mercy, that's Priti, in this definition. These three types have two varieties, Kevala and Sankula, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.5.22.24. So even when we bend our head around the 10 kinds of creation and all these things, then, you know, just when we're comfortable, then then we get to the next. Yeah. So the idea is by the time we get to the 10th canto, we're comfortable with this. Then we can appreciate the subtleties that are there. Right? Kevala Rati. When the Rati has no trace of other types of Rati, is called Kevala Rati, pure Rati. In Brajas found in Krishna's servants, such as Rasala, in friends such as Sri Dhamma, and elders such as Nanda. Shankula Rati. When two or three of the three types of Rati are found together in a person is called Shankula, mixed Rati. Yeah, music they call Sankirtan. It's a similar thing, but it says it's mixed, like you have a few different ragas together, Sankirna. It's the same kind of concept. You have pure and then you have mixed. Okay. It is found in Uddhava, Bhima, and Mukara. Footnote 2. Mukara was a friend of Krishna's grandmother. She acted as a nurse for Yashoda. Okay, in these three types of rati, there's a predominance of the various ratis. Whereas in Svashuddha Rati, the taste is not permanent. Even though various types of rati manifest, because of treating the quality and the possessor of the quality as non-different, a devotee is designated by the particular rati which is most prominent in him. Thus, though Uddhava has Shakyabhav, he is predominantly a servant. Thus, he is designated as a servant. Durgama Sangamani Tika 2526. Does that make sense? So when you have these Shankula. Right, so because they're mixed, you take whichever is the prominent one, and that becomes how you identify the rasa. If it's pure, then it's easy. But if it's mixed, then you take whichever one's prominent. Right? So depending upon how... Yeah, so then this would explain Yudhishthira's position, yes. That you have the parental, the friendship, yes. And the servitorship. But at the same time, as generally you take it, that they're all friends of Krishna. So, but it doesn't mean that that's, yes. And that, as we were discussing before, this may explain this difference in definition of Narad Muni's rasa.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But then one place we were reading, Prabhupada says he's in Dasya. Yeah. Like that. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't have the Shanta, but the Dasya is the prominent. Mm-hmm. So then... Okay. The Yadavs will later be identified as embodiments of Priti Rati, which is defined as follows. Priti Rati. When persons identify themselves as inferior to the Lord, they are called the recipients of mercy. Anugrahya. Their Rati, in which Krishna is perceived as worthy of worship, is called Priti. So Priti is another name for servitorship. But this Priti here, you get the understanding that there's the sense of possession. On Vaikuntha Dasi, you don't get that. It's always basically right wing there. But so you could say is Goloka has that element of that left aspect. But within that, you're going to have left and right. So within Goloka, there's a sense of possessiveness, but within that, you'll have right wing, left wing. Those who identify themselves as inferiors to the Lord are called Anugrahaya, recipients of mercy. The Rati whose essence is to think of the Lord as worshipable is called Priti Rati. Right, so there's the Rati and then there's the identification. Right, so Anugrahaya, that means your identity is your recipient of the Lord's mercy. Right, but the Rati that you have is called Priti. Does that make sense? There's the affection you have, there's the identity, because you have to have both. You have to have an identity, you have to have a affection, or an attachment, right? You have to have your position, and then what is your attachment to Krishna? Because without a position, how do you have an attachment? If you don't know who you are, how do you know what your attachment is?
Isn't it one thing?
it's subdivisions within one thing. Mm. Like, you know, if you don't know who you are, what's your relationship with a loaf of bread? Right? You don't know, you know. That. But if you know, I'm hungry, then you know your relationship with the loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So it sounds that in order to achieve Braj, we have to aspire for three higher rasas, according to this description, basically.
Their Braj, Rupa Goswami basically talks about Sakya Vatsalya and Madhurya. Even Preeti is not a prominent. It's there.
It is there.
Because he mentioned servants of the Lord and stuff like that. But it's not prominent.
Yeah.
Right? The prominence is going to be those three. Just like in general you take all five rasas as rasa. Mm-hmm. But technically, because Shanta is neutral, then only the four higher are called technically dynamic rasa. But of that, then in Vrindavan where it becomes really the element of sweetness comes out, then it's only in the higher three. Okay. So you see in Vrindavan, all the pastimes are amongst those three. The elder you know, gopas and gopis, the younger gopas and the gopis. You know, that's it's like that. But in that you have the cows, you have Vrindavan, you have like this. Then you do have servants, so you hear of Dhanishta and things like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm. We said previously that according to our relationship with Krishna, we get a feeling.
Yes.
So first the relationship, then the feeling.
That's a problem?
No. Here we said that the form should be there and the relationship. Well, I didn't catch it.
I said, or? Who was that? Not sure.
We were talking about the form and the affection.
The form meaning the identity.
Identity.
Like that. That is, you know, so in other words, when the sambandha is there, then you can have that particular attachment, the prayojana. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's why we're saying is Bhaktivinoda Thakura is defining that the Shravana Dasa, that means you're hearing about cultivating, developing the particular attraction of the devotees of that realm. Because there's a generic flavor. Right? Braj has a generic flavor of pure unalloyed devotion.
This is in Gokul.
Yes, no, we're giving the example in Gokul. So then, one has, that's first. Then from that, then you have the detail of what is the rasa. Does that make sense? It means the Brajabhasis all have a particular generic love for Krishna. Right? Then that love is expressed in detail through their specific rasa. Right? Right? Then one becomes absorbed. You know, and one adjusts with that to get adjusted with that. That's Varna Dasa. Right? Then you have Smarana Dasa, means you'll be absorbed in that till the point you come to Samadhi. Having come to that point, now you're qualified to take part in the pastimes. And then from that, then you develop that prema. And then you come to the fifth stage. You inherit your position. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then, generally, like you have sahajas and that, they start out with shravanas. You just hear about, I'm, you know, a peacock or something in Vrindavan, and then you try to adjust with that, right, your sadhana. And so that's, it starts off with the generic flavor. Then there's the detail. Right? There's Braja Bhakti. A detail of that is Mother Jashoda, or the cowherd boys, or the gopis. Yes.
So when Mahaprabhu says Gopi Bharato Kamala Yora Dasa Dasa Anudas, he's definitely talking about Braj, but
yes.
In a general sense.
It means it applies that following the footsteps of the gopis, that full 100% surrender is just about Krishna's pleasure. That's what we're trying to catch. Not saying that we're all gopis.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the whole point, yes. Like that. It can apply to someone's a gopi, but it doesn't. But the position of Braja Bhakti and that surrender that they have remains. Just they're the perfect example of it. Right? Means because, in other words, their development of affection for Krishna being the most intense, you would give them as the best example. So it can either mean that, yes, means following the footsteps in that particular kind of service, or following the footsteps meaning that kind of service attitude. Right? Because the service attitude is the important thing. Now, what kind of service is rendered to express that attitude? Right? See, this is where this principle of the primary and secondary come in. So it's not just in the ritual that's showing the attitude. Then it starts to get finer. Because the attitude of affection, that's actually the primary element. Then how that's expressed, that's secondary.
Yeah.
But in the spiritual world, the secondary is transcendental. Here, it can be quite external. Right? Because the conditioning is made out of matter. Right, so you can change your attitude to spiritual, but the what you're using, then that's secondary. So here you make a greater distinction in analyzation, but in practical application, devotional service, you don't have to. Like that. You don't have to if they're properly situated, the moon is upright and everything. So, is that where?
So we basically all followers of Gopinath, just it doesn't matter which rasa we take.
No, because that's the first point is that kind of surrender. Because how can you say, I just want to interested in this rasa or that rasa, but if you don't have the surrender, what's the meaning of that?
Yeah, it's just a talk.
Yeah, it's just talk, you know, yeah, that's all. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, so that was the difficulty. That's what we see as we're coming on this third canto, is that position behind the basis of everything is Krishna. And so you have these greater energies that are the shelter of the more detailed energies, or the detailed manifestation of that energy. That was the problem in the morning. The classes, you know, talking about the male-female principle, but actually talking about them as detail, not as principle. Therefore, can understand there's eternal time, then there's how time, therefore, influences us on this planet and on the higher planets, and like this. But the principle of time is one thing. So the same way as there's that devotional service that the residents of the spiritual world have, then there's the detail of what specific service they render. You know, like in Vaikuntha, Jaya Vijaya at the door, right? So others are doing other services. So that's specific, you know. You know, just like then it'll be, okay, there's Braja Bhakti, then within that, then there'll be the cowherd boys, then within that there'll be the detail of older, equal, junior, confidential. Then there'll be within that the specifics of what they're doing at the time. You know, so it's always getting finer and finer. But it's all just to please Krishna. That's the first part you have to start with. The generic is just about pleasing Krishna. Then these details have meaning. Right? So we hear about it, so we understand that there's variety, there's that, everybody's happy, it's great. But it's not like we're trying to practice what we're hearing. We're practicing hearing. Right? Like, does that make sense? Right? So we hear about, let's say, the Panchadhyaya, about the Krishna and the gopis. But we're practicing hearing and being absorbed in hearing, not in being absorbed in their mood. Because if we're not absorbed in hearing, how are we going to be absorbed in their mood? Right? So, So that's, you know, we think it's that these things, you move on to these higher levels and the lower ones aren't there. But no, they remain. They still chant Krishna's name. They still are impressed, you know, absorbed or attracted to his form, to his qualities, the pastimes, his associates, paraphernalia, they're all at once, so they're one thing. But for us, there's a progression. But when you apply, it's all at once. Is that makes sense? Yeah.
So we can be sort of in Gopi Bhava. Doesn't mean we have to be gopis ourselves. We just can.
Yeah, it means in following that mood of the gopis, but it doesn't mean that that's going to be our idea of the service. Mm-hmm. Like that. These are subtle. Now, the difficulty is you'll get that on some circles they may appreciate that or not.
Yeah.
So, therefore, better not to bring it up as a discussion. Because those who don't think about these things, then, you know, it'll be confusing. And those that do, then they may be looking at the secondary aspects and take that as primary. And so then you can't explain this either. You know. But the subtleties apply. So it's like, otherwise, how is it, you know, Bhishma is appreciating, you know, what the gopis are doing, or the ladies in Hastinapur, right? He's quoting about them. He's the big warrior, right? You know, not into the, you know, the HIV. Yeah, you wouldn't think of him as being appreciating these level of stuff, right? You know, does that make sense? Yeah, it's just part of it. You know, modern masculine identity, right? Don't want to get too soft here, you know, otherwise people may get the wrong idea, right? So, does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay.
Those who identify themselves as inferiors to the Lord are called anugrahya. Right? That's the identity, the sambandha. Recipients of mercy. That rati whose essence is to think of the Lord as worshipable is called priti rasa. Rati. Does that make sense? So they see themselves as that Lord's mercy, and then they think of the Lord in this way. So then, yeah. The use of the word priti is used in a specific sense called paripashika, being distinct from the previous usage of the word, where it meant joy or pleasure. Also, a priti is used differently to mean bhakti. Right? So that's the thing, is that these words have so many underlying points that depending on the context, you bring out that. It's just like in language you have synonyms, right? So depending upon on the context, you use a particular synonym, right? Elsewhere, okay. Similarly, anugrahya is used with a more specialized meaning than previously. Here it means dasya bhaktas, right? Durgama sangamani tika, right? So it may mean joy or pleasure. It can just mean general bhakti, because priti means that you're dear to the Lord. Or priti means that the happiness that one gets, because otherwise, why would you be something be important to you if it's not giving you joy or pleasure, right? But here in this context, it's being used to mean did you put something different in the bucket, or is it the same? Okay. No, because I was pencil. I guess what the cows ate might be better grass. You get better, more refined smoke. Yeah. Okay, does that make sense? So in other words, we have to get used to that sense. This one thing has so many aspects. It just depends on what is the context that the different ones come out. Does that make sense? You know, so That's what is, it's just like a child when they grow up. You say, okay, this is what you do, this is not what you do. Okay, it's very clear. Then they'll see a situation generally where they see you do something different from them. Right? Then you have to explain the higher level of it, but this is actually what you're trying to get to, so therefore there's different manifestations. Right? So then it takes time to get something like that. Does that make sense? Priti rasa, the bhakti of the Yadavas, is further elaborated on in the second wave of the western section of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Okay. So the western, east. Okay. So we must go east, south, and west, because it's in the third section. When priti, or adoration, achieves a pleasurable nature by vibhavas, anubhavas, sattvikabhavas, and vyavichari bhavas, the hearts of the devotees, in the hearts of the devotees, it is called priti rasa, right? So here's a pleasurable nature. So that's that what it was called before, joy or pleasure. When the recipient of mercy acts as a servant, it is called samprama priti. And the recipient identifies himself as the object of a parental affection. Is called Gaurava Priti. Right? Because senior junior can be as servant or as child. Right? So it's giving the two kinds, Sambrahma and Gaurava. Those who identify themselves as servants of Krishna have Sambrahma Priti for Krishna. When the Sambrahma Priti is nourished by Vibhava and other elements, it is called Sambrahma Priti Rasa. So you have the priti as the affection, and when it's nourished, then you have the taste from that attachment. So that's called then rasa. In sambrahma priti rasa, the alambanas are the Lord, Vishaya, and his servants, Ashraya. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore it's servants in that. So it's a straightforward, you know, but it's just we have to get used to these overlapping definitions, because the same principle may be there in different situations. You know, that there's, like we were saying, that Braja Bhakti is there in the residence of Braja, so that's overlapping in all five rasas. So that means there must be some common element in all the rasas that they can have that point. At the same time, they'll have specific detail that identifies that specific rasa. Right? So their attraction too will be that particular priti. And then that engagement in that, the results that come in the experience, then that's rasa.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? The mood of servitorship takes many different forms. Oh, here it is. The servants are of two types, nitya-siddha associates in the Lord's pastimes, and sadhana-siddhas, those who desire the mood of adasa. Footnote 3. Dasa means servant, but according to Jiva Goswami, it has a second meaning depending on the context. Prashrita means they are well behaved, lowering the eyes before the Lord. Nidesha Vasa Vartina means that they have a desire to follow the instructions of the Lord concerning activities fit for them. Right? So these are different flavors. So someone may, one's prominent, so the other's prominent, but it's all connected. Right? It's not that it's completely separate things. Right? Yeah. However, the brahmanas and others who are the object of veneration by Krishna should be considered dasas, according to the meaning derived from the root of the word. Here, there is a verb, das, meaning to give. The dasas are those to whom desired results are given, dasyate, by mercy of the Lord. Does this make sense? So, generally we're used to hearing dasa means servant. But it's also a Brahminical name. Brahmins are known as dasa, because they're the one to whom you give. Right? Does that make sense? Is that?
That's why Prabhupada gave
the term. It has both aspects. We're servants of Krishna, but the servants of Krishna are the ones that the others are supposed to be respecting and giving, showing mercy towards. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. Some people interpret, oh, it means a Shudra, but it's not. It can be a Shudra name, but it's also a Brahmin, Brahminical name. Like that. So, like that. So for the public, it's a Brahminical name. For our attitude, it's the name of the servant. Right? Is that... The dasas are those to whom desired results are given by the mercy of the Lord. In the Bhasvavriti, this is authenticated. It says, Guninam Brahmano Dasa. Among those qualities, the Brahmins, among those with qualities, the Brahmins are called Dasa, Durgama Sangamani Tika, 3.2.16. And that was a footnote to Durgama Sangamani 3.2.16. So there was the point, and then the footnote with further point. Okay, and that puts us on the next page. Okay, servants are also distinguished by their affinity for the Lord. Four types of dasas are the Adikrita, Ashrita, Parishada, and Anuga. Bhakti Rasamrita 3.2.18. Right. So even within the servants, then you have four kinds, right? Because we're just used to one, but then they're all these. Of these four, the Pandavas are Parishada. That's why it mentioned that they're all associates of the Lord. So whether that means that they are Parishads, means they're Nityasiddhas that descended, or it means that they're sadhana, sadhakas who came up and attained that platform, but the position of the kind of service they render is Parishada. Right? Because then your associate, it has a different flavor than if you're not associate, you're just a servant. Like in Vaikuntha, you're a servant, you're not necessarily an associate. Does that make sense? You know, but if that element of, what do you call it? Samipya, I think, where you're an associate of the Lord, so it'll be a different kind of servant. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Because generally you hear about that, that is same opulence, same form. Yes. That's what you generally hear about. Like that. But then to be an associate or on the same planet, you know, that's the important element. The associates even more. So let's see. Of these four, the Yadavas are Parishada. Parishada. Yet we shall analyze all four. The wise say that Brahma, Shankara, Indra, and others are called Adikrita, appointed dasas. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.19. Adikrita means one who is appointed to a post by the Lord. Durgama Sangamani Tika 3.2.19. So that means all the demigods in that, they're appointed servitors. Thus, the personalities encountered in chapter 2 in heaven and 3 beyond the material world. Indra, Brahma, and Shiva are Adikrita dasas, appointed servants. The next category of dasas is called Ashrita. Ashrita. There are three types of ashritas, so even within those there are subsections. Those who have surrendered to the Lord as their protector, Sharanya. Those who are previously jnanis, jnanichara, but later understood the superiority of the form and qualities of the Lord. In other words, they were on that shanta, then they moved up to dasa. And those who are fixed in service, sevanishta, appreciating the Lord's sweetness. 4. Right. So you see, like Hanuman, he was talking about that. He's fixed, known for being fixed in service. He was always talking about the sweetness of Ramachandra. But you didn't hear Indra, Brahma, or Shiva generally talking about the sweetness. Right? Because it's a different form of dasa. Okay, footnote 4. These three categories of ashrita dasa are described in more detail. O bliss of Vrindavan, O Lord, some people who were fearful take shelter of you completely, understanding that you are the protector, Sharanyas. Example is Kaliya and the kings kept in prison by Jarasandha. Some realize you are greater than Brahman, giving up desire for liberation, surrendered unto you. Jnani Charas, example of the sages headed by Shaunaka. However, hearing again and again about your ever-fresh sweetness from the devotees, may we simply become engaged in service to you, Seva Nishtas. Example, Shiva, Indra, King Bahulasva, Ikshvaku, Shutadev, and Pundarik. So they are the Seva Nishtas within the Ashrita. Right? Does that make sense? So even though, because you hear Shiva indicating, Shiva is that, you may, even though it's an appointed position at the same time, there's the element of, he also has this particular mood. Right? So that's why you can always have these mixes of all these things. It's not necessarily, it's just one fixed aspect. Does that make sense? Bhakti Rasamrita 3.2.22. This verse describes the past condition of fear rather than the present. Now they are devoid of all other desires, no desire for protection from fear, since they are pure devotees. This indicates the Sharanyas. Giving up the desire for liberation indicates also giving up the jnana, which is a cause of Shantarati. That indicates the jnani charas. Kshanti Rati means it's based on the knowledge. So we were discussing the aspects of how the universal form, how the Lord is pervading and everything. So just enjoying that taste and being that is the main position to be fixed at, that will be shanta.
Yes.
Right? But when they're in doing that, seeing that the one wants to render service, then one moves forward. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why we only use that aspect more for applying it to areas of devotional service where there's a stronger interest in these, in the indirect. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because if there's an interest in the direct, what's the need to bring in this secondary aspect of universal form? Right? But where the secondary aspect is prominent, but it's not necessarily connected to Krishna, then this is a way to connect it. So it's useful for that. But with time, as we become purified, then it's not necessary anymore. Because then the gyan, as you were saying, when you get to the platform of bhava, then it can burn up all the knowledge. Because that knowledge was used to burn up the, material attachment. But if that's the preferred platform of viewing and appreciating the Lord, then it remains as Shantarasa or Shantarati. Right? And the Seva Nishtas is that the Jnanicharas appreciate the. Previously they had attraction for Jnan. The difference between the Jnani Charas and the Seva Nishtas is that the Jnani Charas appreciate the greatness of the Lord and the Seva Nishtas appreciate His sweetness. Durgama Sangamani Tika 3.2.22. Next we come to the Yadavas. Like the Seva Nishtas, the Parishadas are attached to serving the Lord from the beginning, but they share greater intimacy with the Lord. Okay. In Dwarka, In Dwarka, Uddhava, Daruka, Satyaki, Shutadev, Satyajit, Nanda, Upananda, and Bhadra are known as Parishadas, members of the assembly or followers. Though they also serve as advisors, charioteers, and other functionaries, at other times they act as his retinue. Right? So it's a matter of they do specific services, but they're part of his retinue, it's part of his scene. In the same way, among the Kuru dynasty, Bhishma, Parikit, and Vidura are known as Parikshadas. Footnote 5. Though not... Bug. Though not mentioned here explicitly, it stands to reason that the Pandavas of Hastinapur are included as Parishas, for they belong to the same family. Does that continue? That's finished. Okay. Their form. The Parishadas always look most splendid, with charming forms, with yellow dress like the Lord, with radiance that defeats the Devatas, and with profuse ornaments. Their bhakti. Your Parishadas, headed by Uddhava, with their intelligence offered to you, constantly uttering a glorification of your victory over Shiva, with words choked up by tears, and with great confidence, showing not even a spot of fear from Rudra, with his fire of devastation, are standing at the gate of Dwarka, eager to do service. Mm-hmm. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2, 31-34. The Parishads in Dwarka do not have even the slightest contamination of fear caused by the disturbance of the fire of final destruction. So their surrender to the Lord is not because of fear. It's just due to that their affection for the Lord. Yes.
It seems that they have a lot, it's more and more like eagerness to serve Krishna.
Yeah. Yes, but you also have even within, like within the what was it, Ashrita, that you had different levels also. Right, because you had those who are fearful take shelter, right? The Sharanyas. Then there's those who were on the Jnana platform and then move forward into service instead of just appreciation. Then those who serve and appreciate the sweetness of the Lord.
Yes.
So that was three within Ashrita.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Adikrita means that they were other designated servants. Right, appointed servants.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So someone like we see may have a mix of that. You know, Daruka is appointed as the charioteer, right? And he serves with that element appreciating the sweetness of the Lord, but he's a Parishad.
Yes.
So you'll see, but so that's why his meaning that you take what's prominent, and that's how you identify someone. Just because these other elements are there, it's still you take what's prominent. You know what I'm saying? Just like chutney, right? It's got hot, sour, sweet, and pungent, right? So then how do you identify, what do you, these four together, right? So it's a chutney. Now if you, the salt, the heat is predominant, the pungency, then that will be what's called jal. It's a kind of treachery that's done more. The salty is, then that will be your, you know, your fries and those kind of things that are generally more salty.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? If it's sweet, then it's called the sweet. If it's sour, then that generally comes into, you know, your chutneys, achars, like this. So it has all these things because it has what combination has there. Does that make sense? But then some cooking, like Gujarati, you'll have all these in your, basically any preparation except sweets has this. Right? It's just a matter of the proportion. When the sour is more, it's a chutney. When the sour is less, then it's a sabji. Right? Does that make sense? Then when it's even more or less, then you eat it with a chutney. Yeah, sort of like.
So our Brahma, he's appointed, but the current Brahma, but he appreciates the sweetness. So would we consider him
In the Ashrita. That means in the, what do you call it? Ashrita and of Ashrita. What was it? The last one is Parishad. No, Parishad is the next group. Sevanishta. Is that what you're saying?
Sevanishta.
You just have to see what's the prominent aspect. It's, see, one can have, and what I'm meaning is one can have all these things, but it doesn't, and just like the sabji may have all those four tastes, and the chutney has all those four tastes, but the balance is different. Like that. I mean, even in South India, they make a sambar, you know, which is like a dal, so it would be considered salty. But they use ripe mangoes they put in it, you know, so that it has that aspect of that sweetness, you know. But so it's, you can mix all these different things. But then the point is what's prominent, you'll call it by that. Does that make sense? Then, thus these devotees of Lord do not have even a speck of fear from Rudra with his fire of destruction, because of confidence in the greatness of the Lord's protection, Madat. The superiority of the Parshas over the Adikritas, such as Shiva, is shown here. Out of great longing, they stand at the outermost door of Dwarka, waiting for their Lord. And so they're just sitting there waiting. Durgama Sangamani Tika, 3.2.34. We always have to remember in this, they're designating so that we appreciate what's the rasa going on, the particular affection, the particular exchange. Because ultimately, devotees are devotees, so then they're all serving the Lord, so it's all perfect. Right? But there is variety within perfect. That's the thing. So we need to get used to that concept. Right? We're used to that, you know, it's just this one singular thing. Because it makes life really easy that way. Right? If you know, after you bath in the morning, you look in the closet, there's one set of shoes, easy. Right? If there's 30 sets of shoes, then problem. Right? You have to think about this and that, and this and that, and that, you know, so. Yeah. Among these parishadas, Uddhava, controlled by prema, is the best. Uddhava's form. I worship Uddhava with dark complexion like the Jamuna, wearing yellow cloth and the garlands used by Krishna. He has arms like door bolts and eyes like lotuses. He is the chief of the Parishadas, filled with waves of bhakti. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2, 35-36. Right, so basically, he looks like Krishna. Like that. So when he first came to Vrindavan, they thought he was Krishna. Right.
Now, this whole description is just to establish who the best would be
in the context. Yeah, well, that's that. Because you see that there's a further step in things. So we're just distinguishing these different tastes. So these. They're all perfect because they're connected to the Lord, but then there's more perfect, most perfect. So that's what we're going through. Beyond the Parishadas, Dwarka is also home to the next category of dasa known as Anuga. Anugas. Those whose hearts are at all times attached to attending upon the Lord are called Anuga dasas, attendants. There are two types. Those in Dwarka and those in Braj. Suchandra, Mandana, Stamba, Sutamba are some of the Anugas in Dwarka. Their forms and ornaments are almost the same as those of the Parishadas. Raktaka, Patraka, Patri, Madhukanta, Madhuvrata, Rasala, Suvilasa, Premakanta, Marandaka, Ananda, Chandrahasa, Payoda, Bakula, Rasada and Shadada are some of the anugas in Braj. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2, 38.42. Within these two categories of dasa, there's further subdivision based on the devotee's inclination to serve Krishna, either Krishna or his devotee. There are three types of parishadas and anugas. Right? So that means you have the categories that are there, then within the category is divided. Right? So that also, you see, is that you get all these, that's how you get all the different flavors and personalities. So Krishna, he has 96 different aspects of his personality. So that means that those will match in either specifics or in combinations the different kinds of rati that the devotees have for him. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say with the Cowherd Boys, Krishna manifests some chivalry. It's fun. You know, especially amongst those who are equals. You know, it'll be appreciated by the juniors, you know, everybody else, but especially amongst the equals, then that's something. But because of the equal nature within the conjugal rasa, the chivalry can also be applied, but it's much more delicate. Because with the boys, you do it, you know, everybody's happy. But you do it to the gopis, and the timing's not right, then you might get zero. Right? You time it right, it works out good. You don't, then... Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's a taste that's in there, but it has other flavors. So you get those that are more clear, those that are mixed, different proportions of the mixed, and this way you can get unlimited rasa. Like we're getting unlimited music out of seven notes. Why won't we get unlimited rasa out of, you take 96 aspects of Krishna's personality and something like, I forget what it is, 200 or 300 of Radharani. And then you mix all that, then you have unlimited, you know. That's why it gets confusing, because it's all in this kind of category. Right? It means there's servitors, then there's four kinds. Within each one, you got have a few kinds. Then, within groups of those, then they're split. Right? Okay. There are three types of parishadas and anugas. Durya, Dhira, and Vira. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.48. That devotee who possesses suitable affection for Krishna. Wow. A new bug. Suddenly every year you see a new bug or a new bird or a new something. This bug I've never seen. The devotee who possesses suitable affection for Krishna, his intimate friends, and his servants is called Durya Parishad, or Duryanuga. Right? So Durya Parishad or Duryanuga, depending upon whether they're Parishad or Duryanuga. Footnote 6. Here are the words spoken by a Durya Bhakta, of Durya Bhakta. This does not authorize Duryan. Yes. Just as Krishna appears as the object of service for me, his dear women are also my objects of service. His devotees are all objects of my service. I consider them my very life. I fear even to think of what rash person who simply makes a pretense of being a devotee. However, even the person who has affection for a donkey who has offered respect to Krishna is blessed with good health. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.50. Don't catch the donkey part. Wait, the donkeys in your area don't offer respect or No? That devotee who taking shelter of Krishna's dear women, though not serving Krishna profusely, becomes the chief object of Krishna's mercy, is called a dhira. Footnote 7. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, an example of a dhira parishad is Satyabhama's nurse's son. He speaks the following verse to give Krishna pleasure. O son who opens the lotus of the Yadus, I do not have to exert much effort to gain a wealth of mercy. I have gained a name by being included as an associate of Satyabhama, who was worshipped by you when you gave her the Parijata tree. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3252. The devotee who takes shelter of Krishna and has incomparable attraction for Krishna, though he does not notice others, is called a Vira Parishad or Viranuga. Right? So in other words, those Durya means they appreciate the Lord and his devotees. Right? You know, basically all equally. Those who then the devotees are more prominent, they're Dira. And those who then Krishna is more prominent as Vira. Right? So within the associates and those who are always, you know, very close with the Lord. So, footnote 8. An example of this attitude. Balaram, enemy of Pralamba, may be the Supreme Lord, but what use do I have for him? What can I gain from the prince Prajumna? Since I have been elevated by the wealth of Krishna's glance of mercy, I do not give regard even to Satyabhama, the head of all Krishna's followers. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3254. This should be understood as a display of external pride because of a special intensity of love. Though the person has actual internal affection for the persons mentioned, it would be disagreeable if this mood were real. This should be understood in the next example also, will be explained in verse 61. This is a private conversation of Virabhakta to a somewhat close associate of Satyabhama. Such frank language showing Krishna's superiority over Balaram and Satyabhama would be embarrassing for Krishna to hear directly. Durgama Sangamani Tika 3254. Right, so it's just these things throw in flavor. Right? That's the whole point. So then it gives all the different flavor. And that's what we're trying to do, right? Because ultimately the priti brings about a particular taste or rasa. Right?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jainatai Gaura Krishna.